Are you, or have you ever been in a relationship which is blowing hot and cold, really great one day, then really, really troubled the next day? Or in a relationship where your partner seems to be absolutely wonderful and incredible, but has a complete lack of empathy, so really struggles to understand what's going on for you, any kind of feelings you might be have? Are you constantly moving between hope and fear in the relationship and really find it quite difficult to extricate yourself from this relationship? Well, if your answer is yes to any of these descriptors, you might well be in a relationship with somebody who is a narcissist. So stay tuned, find out more. Today I'll be talking to Dr. Mariette Janssen, who has written the book From Victim to Victor, a narcissism survival guide, where you will learn more about what it's like to be in a relationship with a narcissist. Well, today I'm really delighted to have the very lovely Mariette Janssen with me. Mariette trained as a psychotherapist originally, so she's got this background, and then later on went to train as a life coach. And she realized that life coaching was really more to her forte, that was the kind of work that she was going to do and enjoy more. But of course, the psychotherapy training also informs her work as a life coach. So she's worked successfully with many, many people, helping them to have a more fulfilling life. I'm really particularly interested in hearing a little bit more today from Mariette about the book that she's written in 2020, which is about narcissism. It's called A Narcissism Survival Guide, and the title is From Victim to Victor. So, Mariette, it would be really nice if you could tell me a bit about what brought you to writing this story, what interested you in this topic in the first place, and let's start there.
Okay, hello, Angela. Nice to be here, and good to speak to you, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk a little bit about how I came to write that book about narcissism. Yeah. Was it out of choice, or was it because this is where my life had led me? I grew up as a narcissistic mother, but I never realized it until I was about, 55. I knew something wasn't right, but I couldn't put my finger on it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't happy with the relationship. I tried everything that I could think of to create something between a mother and a daughter, and it just didn't work out, and it was absolutely devastating. When I did some research, I then discovered that actually my mother had the traits of a narcissist. Mm. And I then started to look in what actually is a narcissist. And it was an absolute delight, even though it was also a devastating delight.
Yeah,
but to know that what was going on had a name, and that it was not just me, and also that it wasn't my fault. Mm. Now, this whole thing of being a victim of a narcissist has really informed a lot of my happiness. And when I broke free from my mother, my life changed emotionally and energetically for the better. I started to talk a little bit about that. I started to think about it, and I thought, you know what? I am just going to write about these old things that she has been doing and saying, and, you know, what I experience, just to share it. And yes, maybe make a book of it. And yes, maybe bring some exercise and some tools in that book. And interestingly enough, in my coaching practice, I started to attract more people who had experiences with narcissists. So it all came together, I think. And it wasn't easy to write. It wasn't easy to refer to my mother and the situation of our family. And people were saying, oh, my goodness, you're talking about your mother.
Yes,
I do. But, you know, not every mother is a pleasant person. And
no, absolutely.
There are a lot of narcissists around that are not being recognized as a narcissist yet. And that was my challenge. When I knew what was going on, I could move on in life. And I think that's the biggest validation for my book. When it was published, the feedback I got from so many people who said, Oh, I'm not the only one. Oh, I self-recognize it. Oh, now I know what is going on in my life. And, you know, I know I'm here to educate people about narcissism, and I'm here to support victims of narcissistic abuse to help themselves, to find themselves again, to build their own, their confidence and start building their world again.
Absolutely, because it's really, I imagine, as you say, it's kind of quite difficult to recognize the signs first, yeah, to know what is a narcissist. I mean, it's bandied about a lot at the moment, isn't it, in the media. There's a lot of talk about it, but when you're actually with a narcissist, I mean, how do you know they're narcissists? What do you look for?
Okay, what I always say to people, the first sign that something is not right in the relationship between you and another person, there could be a parent, it could be a sibling, it could be a romantic partner, but it is when you feel uncomfortable with this person. So this person has the ability to really make you feel on edge and walking on eggshells. Now, that's not to say that anyone who has that effect on you is a narcissist, but it's a sign that there's something not right in that relationship. And then it's difficult to put your finger on a narcissist at first, because they build up their abuse in a very subtle way. Mm. So, you know, they come across as kind, and they seem to be interested in you. And then at one stage, they know a bit more about you, and they start to criticize you on things that are really difficult for you. So, for instance, I've had an eating disorder through all this thing, possibly my way of getting in control. And then someone said to me at one stage, and this person knew all about my background, and said, are you going to the gym lately? And I thought, yes, why? Oh, it looks as if you have gained weight. Now, if you really want to push someone's buttons, you know, it's like weight and appearance like that is a big thing for someone with an eating disorder, someone who had an eating disorder. So then making a remark like that is very unsettling. That would be something that a narcissist would do.
It's quite cruel, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's extremely cruel. And the cruelty is fueled by the lack of empathy. Mm. A narcissist doesn't have empathy, so they don't understand that it is upsetting or unsettling when remarks like that come your way. Yeah. And they seriously, from that point of view, they can't help it. And there's even research, which is fascinating, where a lob of the prefrontal cortex seems to be lacking in the brain of a narcissist. And it's that area in the brain that regulates positive emotions and empathy. So, my goodness, imagine that. So a real narcissist who has that, who lacks that part of their brain, also will never change. And that's
the hard thing, isn't it? That must be very hard, because there is this sort of expectation, I can break through to this person.
Yeah. Well, I talk to people and I say, we've got normal people and we've got narcissists. Yeah, it's a bit sort of black and white, but that sort of explains it. A narcissist has a way of looking at the world that's very alien to most other people. And it's the values they embrace, and it's the thinking pattern they have. And if you're aware of that, and if you apply that on the person you think is a narcissist, then it makes perfect sense what they are saying. But it's all very different from how normal people approach life. So an example there is one of the values that most people will embrace, say, is honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whatever you do, you try to be as honest as possible. It's not always totally possible, maybe, but that's one of the values that a lot of people have. A narcissist embraces dishonesty, because they will change any story in order to make it work for them. So a narcissist is always looking for proof that they are the best, the most important, the prettiest, you know, whatever it is. But they're always top dog. And they are keen to get that admiration and confirmation. And that's called narcissistic supply. Now, they will change whatever story there is into something that will give them the admiration. So a narcissist in the workplace will claim the victory or the success of certain ideas and reports. And they will say, without really any blush or any sense of they might do something wrong, that it was their idea. Right. And then people are gobsmacked. They say, but it can't be true, that can't be true. And they just say, yeah, no, honestly. It's no. And they have no problem there because their value of this honesty allows them to do that.
Yes. Interesting. Right.
Yeah.
So you haven't got a chance then, basically, yeah? When you're in a relationship with someone like this, you just can't, there's a complete disconnect.
There's no
breaking through.
Yeah.
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 Sorry, Marietta. Sorry, I was butting in there.
No, go ahead.
Just one other question I had, which is I was sort of quite curious about. So if you're in a relationship with a narcissist, how does that kind of unfold? What might you experience when you're in a relationship with a narcissist? How does it start?
Oh, it starts so exciting. Angela, can you imagine? You live in London and you meet someone, and then that someone is taking you out for, well, it's not in COVID times, but, you know, before that and after that, will take you on a plane to Paris for lunch.
Mm.
Oh, isn't that exciting? And you get
100,000. You're so special.
Beautiful clothes and flowers and my goodness. And they will tell you that they have been waiting for you all their lives. And it's like a soulmate. And it's like, oh my goodness, it's too good to be true. And that's exactly what it is. It's called love bombing. And love bombing is the tactic that most narcissists apply when they are looking as a predator for their next prey. So if they have sort of sniffed someone out and think, this person seemed to be suitable, then they go for it. And it's almost like they numb you in excitement. And, you know, it's an incredible start of the relationship.
Very seductive, yes.
Once you're hooked, the subtle abuse is starting. So the small criticisms, the undermining, the expectation that you apply yourself to them more than they apply themselves to you, the fact that there's actually no space for you but a lot of space for them. Mm-hmm. They make the decisions. It's very weird because there is this longing for the excitement you had at the start of the relationship.
Yes.
And just when you get numb and say, oh, well, this is all going the wrong way, something happens that reminds you of that start. Yes. So all of a sudden, there's this reminder and there's a little refresher and you think, oh, it's actually not that bad. So you're being played with. Your mind is being played with. It's like, you know, you've tasted how fantastic it could be, and then you're being dragged into the claws of the narcissist, and you have to, you know, you seem to lose yourself, and you get a bit desperate, and then they feed you a little bit of the love bombing again. So they always do just enough to keep you in your place.
Interesting, yes. So you're back hooked in again, yeah. And also, I mean, one thing that you talk about in From Victim to Victor is the idea of the trauma bond.
Yeah.
It might be quite helpful to tell people a bit about that.
If you talk about a narcissist, the narcissist is addicted to the narcissistic supply. The victim of a narcissist is then getting addicted to the whole process of rescuing the narcissist. and always working to make it work. You know, I recognize it with my mother, where I continuously looked for ways of making something work. It was I was preoccupied with that, obsessed with that. And that takes over the whole thinking process. And any addiction is for the little nuggets where you think, oh yeah, it is going better, it is going better. Yes. And you're sort of, you allow yourself get into that prison without seeing it as a prison. It's more like, it's almost like, this is why I'm here. This is my job, is to make this person feel good or make the relationship work.
Yeah. And it's about not having a sense of reality, I suppose, in terms of like what's okay, what's not okay.
And that is the result of the continuous manipulation of a narcissist.
Yes.
And it's interesting. I'm writing my second book on narcissism.
Oh, yes. Tell us more about that.
I've got a light view of the world. And there are lots of very heavy-duty books about, especially heavy-duty subjects as narcissism. So I thought, I'm writing the rule book of the narcissist. And I've got 100 rules that, nearly every narcissist will apply. And it gives an insight, again, in the way they are thinking and the values that they operate from. But what a narcissist will say, if I would say to my mother, oh my goodness, that's not, my mother would say to me, ha, that nail polish, do you like that color? And I would say, well, that's not very nice to say. I said, what did I say wrong? I didn't say anything wrong. I only asked if you liked that color. And strictly speaking, she was right. But the tone of voice and the look in her eyes and the made it all a really undermining, nasty remark.
Yes.
But when you ask them or when you give them that feedback, they're immediately like, oh, well, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm never to blame for anything. It's you who is looking, always looking for the negatives. Yeah. And you think like, oh, God, is that me? Because that is what a narcissist does as well. They make you question your behavior instead of them questioning their behavior.
Absolutely. That's where the sort of gaslighting, to use a colloquial term, comes in, right?
Yeah. Yeah, gaslighting is that technique which results in you doubting your own reality. And I've got an example with that where someone went shopping with their partner and then, said, oh, yeah, what shall I have? Okay, I have this blue blouse, and I'm coming home and then the blue blouse is there. And then 2 weeks later, she put on the blue blouse to go out. And then the partner saying, oh, I hate that blouse. Mm. And she's saying, but how can it be? We bought it together. You said you loved it. She said, oh, we never bought it together. And then the partner thinks, but I'm pretty sure that we did it. Yeah. And even is going down memory lane and thinking, we did buy it, didn't we? So what I say to my clients who are suffering from narcissistic abuse, I say, record situations and events. Have a little notebook, write down, I bought a blue blouse on this and this date in this shop. And my partner was with me and he liked it. And it's not to use that recording to then talk to your narcissist and challenge them and say, see, this is what happened, because they will never admit anyway. But it's for your own sanity. You go back and you think, I had it right. I was right, even though they tried to tell me that I'm wrong.
Yes, yes. I mean, from your perspective, Marietta, do you think there is a chance? Do you have a chance if you're in a relationship with a narcissist? Can you make it work?
If you have very low expectations of the relationship, and if you're willing to give yourself away, and if you call that the relationship works, then yeah. But really, it would never be balanced. You would never get your emotional needs met. You know, you are there to serve your narcissist.
Mm.
Well, what sort of relationship is that? And, you know, the sad, it's really, really sad when people are in a romantic relationship and they can't get out.
Mm.
They can't get out because of financial reasons. They can't get out of practical reasons. You know, I've got clients who are in their 70s and discovered some through my book, some through blog posts, you know, or one way or the other. And they say, oh my goodness, I've been spending 40 years of my life with a narcissist. And now we're practically codependent because, you know, I'm not well, or we're in our 70s. We are not able to live by ourselves. We just sort of, I need to make do. That's really, really difficult. But if you can get out, then that would be the best thing. You would do yourself the best service.
Have you encountered that with clients you work with who got back to you and said, I did it, I walked away?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What did they report?
The freedom of thought, the freedom of just making your own decisions, not have someone controlling you. But also, there's always a price to pay. So people would have moved. Some have changed their names. Because a narcissist can't accept that they are not a suitable partner. I mean, they will make that decision, you know, if they don't want to be with you anymore, or they have found another narcissistic supply in another person. It's far, very easy for them to move away. But if you are the one who makes a decision, is you're actually telling them that they are not the best. So they're extremely cheesed off, is that. And they will punish you. They will try to punish you. And also they will try to reel you back in all sorts of ways to sort of start the control cycle again. And then sometimes they want to reel you in just for them to be the one to enter relationship.
Yeah. So it could take many attempts, so to speak, to make that decision, to say, I'm going to walk away now from this relationship because, as you say, my needs are not being met. Yeah.
Yeah.
It might take a while.
Yeah. And that's where the trauma bond comes in. So this is where the victim is actually, in a way, also hooked to their narcissist. And they step out of it. They think that's it. And then all of a sudden the narcissist starts to do the love bombing again. Maybe in another way. Maybe say, I've changed my lifestyle. I'm not drinking anymore. Look, I'm all healthy like you. And I go for a run with you like you are always doing, like you wanted me to do. Yeah, I think like, oh my goodness, yeah. He or she has changed. I should give it a chance. You should never feel obliged to give someone another chance, you know, not after the abuse that you have suffered. But they don't, you know, it's sometimes very difficult for victims to see that. And people go through the cycle a number of times before they really leave.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, with domestic abuse, I don't know what the numbers are. Is it people try to leave 7 times before they are really leaving?
Yeah.
So it's a very similar process.
It's a similar kind of cycle, isn't it? I can't remember the figure either, but absolutely it's the same presentation. It just takes a long time. It takes time, doesn't it? It takes time because it's so it's so hard to acknowledge that that's the situation that you're in. And as
but
you say, when
also,
you're
what,
you can't. Yeah.
What a narcissist is doing, they create a whole circle around them, and they always work on their presentation and on the impression they make on others. So say you are with a narcissistic man, and he will go to the pub and be the life and soul of the party and buy everyone drinks and be fun and be sort of, you know, what a lovely guy that is. And at the moment he's home with you, he changes. So if you then start to talk to one of your friends who happened to be in the pub and you say, oh my God, this is such a nightmare, so it's so difficult, they will look at you and think like, you must be mad. Such a lucky guy, you know, something you don't appreciate him for what he is, or, you know, or if, like in my case, if I was talking about my mother, people would say, oh, but it's your mother. Oh, she doesn't mean it. Oh, and then how can you say something like that about your mother? So it's very difficult if you are the victim of a narcissist to find people who understand or who are willing to believe what is happening, because they see something different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And also very often, what I imagine what's often the case is that you get isolated over time. Yeah,
that's what a narcissist.
Self-confidence gets eroded. It's quite difficult, yeah, to kind of, you know, you get cut off from friends.
Well, one of the things that your narcissist will do, they will... Alienate. Oh, this is my assistant.
Sounds very proficient. Right.
My little assistant who thought, oh, someone at the front door, a delivery man or something. I need to check that out.
Yeah.
So we were talking about...
Isolation. I was wondering whether there's also, this is part of the difficulty that, you know, confidence gets eroded over time. You might lose touch with other people. So I wonder whether that's certainly a presentation that you often have with domestic abuse. So I wonder whether that plays out with narcissistic relationships or a relationship with a narcissist as well.
Absolutely. It's beneficial for the narcissist to alienate their victim from family and friends. Because if there was a good relationship with family and friends, then that could become a powerhouse against them. Yes. So they're very good at triangulation, which is talking on behalf of someone else. And so... an example my mother did. My sister and I were not very close because my mother didn't allow that. She would say to me, oh, your sister is saying nasty things about you. So I would be cross with my sister. And then she would say the same thing to my sister. So we wouldn't talk to each other. We were not sort of very close. And there was one example. Then I was in the UK. I lived in the UK and my parents and my sister live in the Netherlands. I visited for a weekend, and on that Saturday afternoon, I said to my mother, I'm going and visit Anneke, my sister, because she has a new house. I want to see her new house. And my mother said to me, well, she's not home. She's away this weekend. I thought, oh, well, in that case, no point of me going. And the next 2 months, I didn't hear from my sister. She was in a big strop because she was home and she was hoping to see me that weekend. And she was almost expecting me, thinking, well, my sister is there. And, you know, and that was when we discovered that our mother tried everything to sort of keep us apart. And that was the end of that power tool for my mother, because whenever she said something about one of us, we decided we check it with each other. And that's what I say to my clients as well. Never, ever believe your narcissist. Yeah. Whatever they are saying about someone else, check it with that other person. Yeah. If they say, I have paid in your account, don't believe it, check your account. Right. If they say the weekend is cancelled, check it with the organizers.
Yes.
You know, in order to survive, you have to be... very aware and very sharp all the time.
Yes, and it's kind of goes, it's sort of counterintuitive to this idea that you have trust in a relationship, right? It's quite, I imagine that's why it's difficult for a lot of clients.
And that's where the values are coming in. So values like honesty and trust and love and respect, that's not what a narcissist embraces. A narcissist is disrespect, dishonesty, self-importance. You know, those are the things that will lead their behavior and their thought pattern, which is alien to most other people. So it will never lead to a healthy, fulfilling connection.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. No chance there. Yeah.
And it's very
if I sort of summarize what you've talked about, Marietta, it sounds like, you know, run when you, if you can, yeah, or when you can.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. As hard and as far away as you can.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Not an easy thing to do, I can imagine. Yeah.
Well, especially not when it comes to family members, because you will, you know, most families will have meetups and Christmas or weddings or funerals where, you know, family members will have to meet each other. So that makes it tough. And when it comes to a parent, for me to, I cut my mother out of my life, but I was 58 when I did it. And she'd done some pretty grim stuff before I was able to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine. And I just really love your honesty. I just love to hear that you can, you know, because that must have been really difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It's not what you aim for, and it's not what I worked for all those years, all those attempts to, you know, explain what was happening, trying to connect, having a glimpse of, oh, she gets it, this will turn the corner.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
No.
Yeah.
Right. Well, is there anything that we haven't covered that you think?
Oh, loads.
Take away from this.
Not a few hours. Come on. But I would say, I would highly recommend for people who think or have a suspicion that, you know, they have a person in their life who is not contributing to their well-being, but they can't put a finger on it, to get my book and take themselves through the checklist with the 50 traits.
Exactly.
Because it is not meant as a scientific diagnostic tool, but this is meant as from the victim's perspective. If someone has an effect on you, if someone's behavior affects you in this way, then yes, you might be dealing with a narcissist. And, you know, in order to keep yourself safe and sane, you need to find the right responses that work for you, because otherwise you'll be eaten alive.
Yeah.
So the traits of the narcissist are also traits that, you know, people with challenging behavior show. So bullies and just unpleasant people and just people you don't trust, if that makes sense. So I think it really helps to recognize other people's behavior, the effect it has on you, and what you can do about it, because it's all about, and that's the title, from victim to victor. Victim doesn't have knowledge, doesn't feel the power, you know, think they can't take control. If you're a victor, you have knowledge, you can step into your power, and you can take control.
Absolutely. And that's what I really loved about the book. It's just, it has really a sort of very clear structure, yeah, to work through.
I wrote it twice. The first time it didn't have a structure. And I said, oh my goodness, this is absolutely rubbish. It's not good. So then I reframed everything. And but it's good to hear that I did a good job there.
Yeah. Definitely. No, I'll definitely recommend it to my clients, Marietta. I think it's excellent. It's really good.
Yeah. It's on all.
And you said you're working on the new book there. Sorry, what do you have a title for that yet?
Well, I mean, it's the rule book of the narcissist, but I thought maybe something like Narcissism in a Nutshell.
Right, I like that.
And then the subtitle saying the rule book of the narcissist, and it's the rules of the narcissist, and then a helpful response. So what to do or what not to do, because there are occasions when you say, I'm going to challenge this narcissist. Well, you might as well not. Because you will bash your head against a brick wall if you try to get through. Yeah. So maybe just shrug your shoulders and walk away. Yeah. But it's another way of surviving. Other tools to survive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, wonderful. Sorry, I'm losing my voice. Wonderful. I mean, I think this has been really, really helpful, because it's such a an insidious experience when you're in this situation in the relationship of any shape or form with a narcissist. It's so hard. It's so hard to recognize for all the reasons that you were talking about today. So it's so helpful. And I'm so glad that we could talk about it. So, yeah, so anyone who is listening in today, I would really recommend the From Victim to Victor Narcissism Survival Guide, because as we said, there are a lot of pointers in the book that are really, really helpful, very clear, kind of guides you through this process of what do I do with this now? Yeah, which is exactly what's needed. It's you need some help with this. This is not easy to remove yourself from this situation. So that's where the book is absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
Also, so, if I can mention, if people go to my website, it's drkitpress.co.uk.
Can you say that again? I talked over you there. Sorry.
It's Dr. Dishes, D-R-D-E, and then stress, drdishes.co.uk. And what I offer to people is a free coaching call. So if they are not quite sure, if they just want to have a chat with me, they can book a slot and we can spend some time together.
Brilliant. Exactly what's needed. Fantastic. Well, it's been an absolute delight talking to you, Mariette. I should have said at the beginning of this introduction that Mariette was my very first counseling tutor. So I'm forever indebted to you, because you got me onto, you set me on this path, and you were just inspiring as a tutor. So it's just really delightful talking to you today. Really enjoyed it.
Me too. It was a pleasure, Angela.
Okay. You take good care. And we'll talk another time. Yeah.
Bye for now.
I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. If you'd like to find out more about creating great relationships, go to therelationshipmaze.com, and I look forward to seeing you there. And remember to tune in to the next podcast.